Okay, thank you. So the title of my talk is Detecting Fractional Statistics with the Electronic Mach-Zehnder Interferometer. Now, there will be no stochastic geometry in this talk, although some connection probably exists. There will be some topology, especially in the non-abelian case. However, I have only half an hour, and in order to understand the non-abelian case, one needs to understand the abelian case first. And I will explain what abelian and non-abelian statistics mean in 1 minute. So I will have to focus on the abelian statistics on this talk, and you'll be able to spend only very little time on this part. But all details of the non-abelian case can be found in my paper with Alexey Kitaev. And as for the abelian statistics, I will focus on the physical picture, because it turns out that most results can be derived from a simple qualitative argument. And as for the calculations, which are actually very long, they can be found in a long paper written in collaboration with my student Kam Chuen Lo and Yuval Geffen. So we know that there are two types of particles in the universe, fermions and bosons. Certainly, high-energy theorists realized long ago that in a two-dimensional world, many other types of particles could be possible, and they have a name for them, anions. However, if you ask string phenomenologists about the number of dimensions in our space, the answer too is very unlikely. Most likely, they will tell you something like 11. So this means that the fundamental particles cannot be anions. They must be fermions and bosons only. On the other hand, in condensed metaphysics, it would be very hard to produce a system with 11 dimensions. But certainly, many two-dimensional systems exist. And we may ask about the statistics of elementary excitations in such systems. And the theory actually tells us that in some situations, these statistics is anionic or fractional statistics indeed. And specifically, this prediction is made about two-dimensional systems which exhibit the fractional quantum Hall effect. Certainly, this is a theoretical prediction, and to the best of my knowledge, there is no such thing as a direct experimental observation of fractional statistics yet. However, in the simplest case of the so-called abelian statistics, there is so much indirect evidence that one can be pretty confident that abelian anions exist. On the other hand, the situation is much less clear in the more interesting case of non-abelian statistics, and this leads to the motivation for my talk. So I'm going to propose an experiment which should allow to understand if non-abelian anions exist. And the same experiment can be used as a demonstration experiment for the existence of abelian anions, something like the Foucault pendulum for the rotation of the Earth. Again, during the last few months, there were already several different proposals how one can observe non-abelian statistics if it exists. However, the proposal which I am going to discuss has several major advantages in comparison with all previous proposals, and at this point I will mention only one of them. So all these proposals involve some complicated device which must be somehow fabricated on the nanoscale. And this may be a challenging task for experimentalists. And my proposal is no exception. I need such non-trivial device, the electronic Mach-Zehnder interferometer. However, in contrast to all other proposals, such device has already been fabricated at Weizmann Institute. The purpose for which it was made was very different from the observation of fractional statistics, and also the device was operated in a different regime, which is not suitable for this purpose anyway, but as I'm going to convince you, in the appropriate regime, this device is exactly what one needs. And this is the outline of my talk. So first, I need to give some introduction. I need to remind briefly the basic facts about quantum Hall effect, because this is the effect we need in this story. And then I need to explain what I mean when I speak about abelian and non-abelian statistics. And after this, we will be ready to discuss the properties of the electronic Mach-Zehnder interferometer and its application for the detection of fractional statistics. So first, I need to explain the structure, and then I'm going to discuss its transfer properties. As you will see, already the simplest thing, the current that flows through this interferometer when we apply voltage to it, already this current tells us about the statistics of the particles. And as for the third part, it came from different talk. I will have no time for technical details in this short talk. Okay. You know very well what fermions and bosons are. So when we have two bosons and we exchange their positions, then the wave function doesn't change at all. If we have two fermions and exchange their positions, the wave function changes its sign. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to distinguish fermions and bosons on the one hand from everything else on the other hand. And hence, it will be more convenient for me to consider a different process. So let one particle make a full circle around another identical particle. This process is certainly equivalent to two consecutive particle exchanges. And hence, for bosons and fermions, this process doesn't change the wave function at all. So this gives me a convenient way to define anions. I can tell that if the wave function changes, then I have an anion. And this definition also shows that there are two possibilities, two different types of anions. The very simple thing which can happen to the wave function is the following. The wave function changes, but the quantum state of the system doesn't change. And this means that we just multiply the wave function by some factor. In this simplest case, we speak about abelian statistics. And this factor has always the form e to the power I theta s, where theta s is some constant. We can call it, say, statistical phase. Now, much more interesting story is the story of non-abelian anions. And in this story, not only the wave function changes after one particle makes a circle around another particle, even the quantum state itself changes. So this means that the quantum state vector, it rotates by some angle in the Hilbert space. And hence, the absolute value of the inner product of the initial and final states is distinct from one. So this is the case of the non-abelian statistics. And now my question is, do such particles really exist in the nature? But before I can address this question, I need to understand if my definition makes any sense at all. Again, I told that the wave function must change after one particle makes a circle around another particle. And on the other hand, I assume that when there are no identical particles inside the trajectory, then the wave function doesn't change after such circle. And now it turns out that this definition is very bad in three-dimensional systems, simply because there is no clear way to distinguish these type of trajectories from these type of trajectories. In fact, I can continuously deform this situation into this situation. I just need to move this circle outside this transparency in the direction of this hole, then I can move it in the direction parallel to the transparency, to the left, so to the right for the audience, and then I have put it back into this transparency. And so I come from this picture to this picture. And this process works even if I prohibit my particles to occupy the same place at the same time, say, because of the repulsion of their electric charges. So in any case, I can continuously deform this situation into this situation in a three-dimensional space. And this means that I don't really know which trajectories encircle a particle and which don't. And hence, in three dimensions, my definition is bad and ambiguous. I'm not going to speak about anions in three dimensions. But in two dimensions, the life is much better, because now these two pictures are clearly different. There is no way to deform this picture into this picture, at least if I don't allow two particles to stay in the same point. And hence, I can really speak about anions in two dimensions, and I may ask if they actually exist, not only as a theoretical possibility. And they are expected to exist, and the system in which they exist is the two-dimensional electron gas. So we can consider a two-dimensional system of electrons in a strong magnetic field perpendicular to this system. And such systems are known to exhibit the quantum Hall effect at low temperatures. And the most obvious manifestation of the quantum Hall effect comes from transport. So one can just apply voltage to this system and measure the electric current. It turns out that in the case of the quantum Hall effect, this current flows in the direction perpendicular to the electric field. So this is the electric field, this is the current. And as in most other situations, this current is simply proportional to the voltage. But the coefficient, known as the quantum Hall conductance, this coefficient is very strange, because it can be expressed in terms of the universal constants only. It contains the electric charge of one electron, it contains the Planck constant, and some rational number, which we call the filling factor. And one can understand what this means if one looks at the dependence of this quantum Hall conductance, or better, quantum Hall resistance, which is 1 over this conductance, as a function of the magnetic field. If one changes the magnetic field, this conductance changes. But there are regions of the magnetic field in which the conductance remains a constant, independent of the magnetic field. And we call them quantum Hall plateaus. And on these plateaus, this relation holds with different values of the filling factor nu. So if it's an integer, like say 2 here or 1 here, then we speak about the integer quantum Hall effect. And if it's a fractional number, like say 1/3 or 2/5 or say 5 over 2 somewhere here, then we speak about the fractional quantum Hall effect. And now the integer quantum Hall effect will be of no interest for us in this story, because it can be understood from a model of non-interacting electrons. And certainly, if everything can be described by non-interacting electrons, then all elementary excitations are electrons themselves, which are fermions. So no anions in the integer quantum Hall effect. On the other hand, in the case of the fractional quantum Hall effect, strong electron interaction does play much role, and this situation is much more interesting for us, because in the case of strongly interacting system, we may expect that elementary excitations are very different from the electrons, which are elementary building blocks here, and this indeed happens. And what actually happens was understood long ago by Laughlin for a set of states which correspond to these famous filling factors 1 over an odd integer. And in this case, he was simply able to get the correct wave function. Or to be more precise, he found a very good approximation. But later, Haldane showed that this approximation is actually an eigenfunction of a related Hamiltonian. And now, if we know that, if we know the ground state wave function, if we know the wave function of elementary excitations, then we can tell everything about the system. We can tell, say, what is the electric charge of the elementary excitations. And it turns out that in the states with such filling factor, this charge of the elementary excitations is smaller than the electron charge. So we don't have electrons, we don't have some combinations of 2 or 3 electrons, we actually have a fraction of the electron as an elementary excitation. So here the charge is equal to the product of the electric charge and this filling factor, which is 1 integer number. And this is a very non-trivial prediction, which was made in early 80s, and it waited for a very long time before it was confirmed by direct experimental observation. So this was done in 1997 at Weizmann and at Saclay. And immediately after that, Laughlin got a Nobel Prize in 1998. But as for the statistics, even though the predictions were also rather early, there is still no such thing as direct observation. And now, what is the statistics of this story? It turns out that we have abelian anions. So these particles with this fractional charge are abelian anions. And when one particle makes a full circle around another particle, its quantum state doesn't change, but the wave function picks up a constant factor, which is expressed via such statistical phase, 2 pi over nu. If it were 0 or 2 pi, we would have fermions or bosons. But this phase is in the middle. And there is a very nice, simple interpretation of such abelian fractional statistics, which is due to Arrhos. So let us forget about any statistics, and let us instead consider the following picture. There is a fractional charge, and there is a narrow solenoid tube attached to this charge. So there is some magnetic field inside this tube, no magnetic field outside. And let us assume that the magnetic flux associated with this tube equals one flux quantum. So it's the Planck constant times the speed of light divided by the electron charge. Now, what happens when another particle makes a circle around this tube, and this particle carries the same fractional charge? It's clear that it cannot feel any magnetic field, because all magnetic field is inside the solenoid. But still, all space is filled with the vector potential due to this magnetic field inside the solenoid, and this can be felt. This is known as the Aronoff-Bohm effect, and as a result, the wave function actually is going to change. And the change is exactly the same as in this story. So the wave function simply picks up some phase, which is shown here, exactly the same phase. So it's a nice interpretation, which can be used and which will be used in this talk. And a similar picture of abelian anions with some fractional charges applies in a lot of other quantum Hall states. But there is at least one very important exception. This is a state which is expected to describe the quantum Hall effect at filling factor 5 over 2. What exactly happens here is not still clear from experiments, and that's the motivation for my talk, actually. But numerical simulations seem to support a proposal due to Moore and Reed, who suggested a rather unusual state. So as always, the state is characterized by some fractional charges. So the elementary excitation carries a charge which is one quarter of the electron charge, but these excitations exhibit a non-abelian statistics. And this means that when one particle makes a full circle around another particle, the change is more than the change just of a wave function. The quantum state also changes. And in other words, this means that if I fix the coordinates of my two particles, this still doesn't fix the quantum state completely. There must be an additional degree of freedom, and there must be at least two independent wave functions for each set of coordinates. Otherwise, after making a full circle, I must return to the state from which I began. And indeed, Moore and Reed have a picture in which there are two different states for the system of two anions, and an additional quantum number one needs. This additional quantum number is called the topological charge. So one of the states belongs to the vacuum superselection sector, and this topological charge is denoted as one. It's not a digit, it's just a label. And the second state belongs to the fermion superselection sector, and its topological charge is denoted with epsilon. So this is what happens when you have just two particles. If you have more particles, the life is even more interesting, but I really have very little time, so at this point let me interrupt the discussion of non-abelian statistics. I will come back to this later, and at this point I would like to come to the original part of the story about the electronic Mach-Zehnder interferometer. So the interferometer, it was actually fabricated at Weizmann Institute, so I could show an STM picture, but I think it would be more clear if I make a sketch. And to make it even more clear, let me repeat this sketch on the blackboard. So can everybody see what I write here? Or should I move the screen?
Put the light on.
Huh?
Switch the light.
Okay. So the structure is the following. So I have some quantum Hall liquid in the upper half plane, above this line. So everything above this line is some quantum Hall system, and this line is an edge. Now, this is my first step. Next, I made a hole inside this quantum Hall liquid. So there is a hole. Now, quantum Hall liquid occupies everything above this line except the interior of this hole. And finally, I attach electric contacts here to this hole. So what does this picture mean? we know that in quantum Hall systems, the charge can propagate only along the edges and only in one direction. Say on this edge, the charge moves from this source to this drain. So now I can switch back to this transparency. So the charge moves from this source along this edge and disappears in this drain. And the same story is valid for this edge. The charge moves along this edge from this source and then disappears in this drain. But now, if this was the whole story, it would be absolutely not interesting. There is one more element here. The Heiblum at Weizmann Institute has gate electrodes, and changing the voltage of these electrodes, he can slightly change the shape of the edges. And in particular, he can bring these two edges close in this point, and also he can bring them close in this point. And as a result, the charge, the quasi-particles, can tunnel between this edge and this edge here, and between this edge and this edge here. And I have two small tunneling amplitudes here, gamma 1 and gamma 2. And this makes the story more interesting, because now I have two more trajectories. It's possible for the charge to move out of this source, then tunnel here, continue along this line, and disappear in this drain. Or it's possible to go from here, tunnel here, and then again disappear in this drain. So anyway, I get some current that goes out of this source, but ends up in this drain. And if I apply some voltage between these two edges, I actually get a non-zero current from this source to this drain, which is the current between two edges. And now, this current is rather interesting because it contains some quantum interference inside, the interference between these two trajectories, which correspond to two tunneling contacts. And then we try to understand what this current is. Now, in the simplest case of the integer quantum Hall effect, the only case for which the experiments were actually made so far, the picture is very simple. So what essentially happens? I have three contributions to the current. One contribution comes just from this point, as if no tunneling here were possible at all. And since my tunneling amplitude is small, this contribution to the current is simply proportional to the square of the tunneling amplitude. And I certainly have a similar contribution from this tunneling constant. But in addition to this, I have quantum interference between two trajectories, this one and this one. So the interference term contains both tunneling amplitudes gamma 1 and gamma 2, and also this thing knows about the magnetic flux through the hole. Remember that we have some magnetic field perpendicular to the system. And hence, there is some Aronov bomb phase inside this interference term, and one can see that this phase is now 2 pi times the flux divided by 1 flux quantum, which means that the current must be periodic as a function of the flux with a period equal to 1 flux quantum.
What was the source and the drain for this particular current here?
Okay, it flows from this source and disappears in this drain.
That drain?
Yes. So, and this current was measured in the integer quantum Hall effect. There are some problems with the values of these coefficients, but this structure, and in particular this periodicity, are very well confirmed. But now, what happens in the fractional quantum Hall effect when the charges are smaller than an electric charge? From the first side, the situation is extremely simple. And from the first side, one would think that everything is the same as for electrons, just the charge is different. So one expects that the current is something like the product of the tunneling probability times the charge. And this tunneling probability is just the same story as before. I have something proportional to the square of this amplitude, something that comes from this amplitude, and some interference contribution. Which contains the magnetic flux. But now, we must take into account the fact that the charge is different. So the Aaron of bond phase is multiplied by different charge, which is smaller than the charge of an electron. And when we do this, we see that the expression is very similar, just the periodicity is different. The periodicity as a function of the flux is now is something like flux quantum divided by the filling factor, which is more than the filling factor. And this nice result just cannot be correct. We know that electrons, out of which everything is actually made, cannot fill such thing as one flux quantum. Or if you want, there is even a rigorous theorem proven by Byers and Young that in any interferometer with a hole, the current must be a periodic function of the flux with a period which equals one flux quantum. So the expression which I wrote, such probability times the quasi-particle charge, makes just no sense. Something is wrong. And when we try to understand what is wrong, we realize that what we lost is the fractional statistics. So again, such expression for the tunneling probability for one quasi-particle is absolutely correct when I consider just the very first tunneling event. But now, let me think of the second quasi-particle. So it tunnels already after one quasi-particle has tunneled. And what happens when this first quasi-particle tunneled? Well, it came here, it continued along the edge, it disappeared somewhere very far from here, and probably we have a full right to forget about this electric charge. But what about the flux? Well, maybe it came very far. Maybe this line is extremely long and this flux is very, very far, but no matter how far it is, the total phase accumulated when you go around this flux, it is always the same. So no matter how far this particle carried its solenoid, we remember there is a solenoid with flux phi naught attached to the quasi-particle, no matter how far it moved, all subsequent quasi-particles will remember about this. From their point of view, the total flux is no longer phi. It's phi plus this magnetic flux, phi plus phi naught. That's what happened. And hence, the probability of the second tunneling event is given by exactly the same formula, but with a different flux, phi plus phi naught. That's what happens with the second quasi-particle. And now, after it tunneled, its charge is again forgotten, but its flux cannot be lost. So for the third quasi-particle, the tunneling probability will be phi plus 2 phi naught, and so forth. Finally, one can check that after one of the new tunneling events, it finally returns to the same probability as at the very beginning. So that's what happens. And now it's clear that one cannot just multiply the probability by the charge. This would not give you current, because you don't know what probability to choose. But certainly the current is not a product of the charge and probability. The current is actually the ratio of the total charge transferred in the process and the total time which is needed for this process. And in this case, we can consider one of the new subsequent tunneling events. So what we get is the ratio of the charge of one of the new quasi-particles, which is just one electron. And this must be divided by the total time, which is the sum of one over new times. And each of these times is one over the appropriate probability. Or this can be rewritten as the harmonic average of one over new different currents, say three currents when the filling factor is one third, and each of these currents is current calculated according to an incorrect formula, the current which doesn't know about the fractional statistics. If we calculate such wrong currents and take the harmonic average, we get exactly what we want. And this is a very funny formula, as I think. And in particular, we can tell that this Mach-Zehnder interferometer is a kind of quantum computer, which is certainly good for only one thing, for the calculation of harmonic averages. But one can also try to find other interpretations. And one nice thing about this expression is that it allows to see the statistics of quasi-particles. So what one can do? One can split the current into the piece which is independent of the magnetic flux and the piece which depends on the magnetic flux. Such decomposition is always possible. Doesn't matter if gamma 2 is much less than gamma 1. And one can always derive some relation between these two contributions, which can be actually measured when one just changes the flux slightly. And from this relation, one can see the statistics. But the relation simplifies very much when one of the constants is much smaller than the other, when tunneling occurs mostly at one contact. So So I have written the expression only in this particular case, which is the simplest one. And in this case, we see that these two coefficients just have a simple scaling relation. And this scaling relation knows about the statistical angle theta s, so it knows about the statistics. And so one can tell that this device measures the statistics of abelian anions, which is certainly nice, but at the end of the day, we are sure that they are there. And a more interesting story is the case of non-abelian anions. But before I come there, I unfortunately don't have any time to discuss this story in details. Let me just tell you that in addition to all this hand-waving, real calculations were done. They are long. The answers are also pretty long. But the general structure is always the same, the harmonic average. And just one interesting technical aspect will be seen from the next transparency, the limit of the current at zero temperature. When one does this, one very clearly sees that the dependence of the current on my tunneling amplitudes gamma 1 and gamma 2 is non-analytic. So they both are supposed to be small. Nevertheless, the current depends in a non-analytic way on them. And this is certainly natural. I got this harmonic average. It's expected to be non-analytic. But this also means that technically, this is not a very simple piece of work, because normally such calculations are done with Kelbisch technique. And Kelbisch technique is some perturbative calculations. The only way to get such non-analytic answer from the perturbation theory consists in summing an infinite number of orders. But the most interesting technical aspect here is actually different: how to write down the Hamiltonian. But I absolutely cannot discuss all this. Anyway, when one does all calculations correctly, the result is the same as comes from the physical picture. Now, what about the non-abelian case? The most interesting difference of the abelian and non-abelian case comes from the noise, but discussing the noise would require a few more transparencies, so I cannot do this. Instead, let me show what happens with the current, because some very clear difference emerges already between all Laplacian states on the one hand and the Moore-Reed state at the Feeding factor 5/2 on the other hand. So it turns out that when both tunneling amplitudes are small, then the current can be just decomposed as a sum of two harmonics. No dependence on the flux plus this linear harmonic, and nothing else. So this is what happens in the abelian case. In the non-abelian case, the dependence of the current on the flux is more interesting. It turns out to be the ratio of such two linear trigonometric polynomials. So if one can fit the current by an expression of this form, this tells you that you have non-abelian statistics. So this is the difference of these cases, and now my time is completely used. So let me just show my summary.
But do you mean the last formula, is that perturbative in gammas?
Both gammas are small. Both gammas are small, but the coefficients in all these equations are non-analytic in gammas. So if one wants to do this accurately, it's a very long calculation. If one just wants to understand what's going on, one writes down the kinetic equation. Suddenly one gets exactly the same result.
That means constants.
Huh?
Constants seem to be the crucial part of that expression.
What are these constants?
Well,
this phase? Yes. Well, some phase. It's the same here and here, so it doesn't matter actually.
Same.
Yes, it's the same. I should have made it more clear. Well, this constant just sees in the relative phase of these two gammas essentially. So. Okay. So let me just show my summary. So unfortunately, I didn't have much time to discuss the non-abelian case, which is much more interesting, but it would be impossible without the discussion of the abelian case. And the summary is shown here. So first of all, this interferometer can be used as a tool to probe fractional statistics. For example, one can just decompose the current and the flux dependent and flux independent parts, and there are some nice relations, like a scaling relation in an appropriate limit. And this limit can be achieved experimentally. These tunneling constants can be changed. So that's what experimentalists actually do. And as for the difference between the abelian and non-abelian case, there is also a clear difference in their dependence on the magnetic flux, and a much more interesting difference which I couldn't discuss, the difference in the short noise, which is very different from the classical Kalman-Fisher result for one tunnel in contact. And finally, there is a very funny formula with a harmonic average of a set of incorrect answers to the problem. Thank you.
Now,
the biggest problem here is different. Yeah. So, first of all, what is the good news? The good news is that this experiment was made in the integer quantum Hall effect and everything worked exactly the way it was shown here. There are some questions about these coefficients, but it's not that important at the end of the day. The flux dependence is more important. Now, a more difficult question is, what happens with the edges of the sample when you go to strong magnetic field? So the question is actually, to what extent I actually have the physics I want at these edges? So that's a subtle question, but this is a rather robust proposal. Even if you have edge reconstruction, in most cases you would still expect that you see the same story. So that's a good thing about this proposal.
Okay, I just wanted to understand better the statement. In order to understand to distinguish experimentally between abelian and non-abelian case, your statement is that one should measure the short noise? Or?
Well, one can measure just the current. Actually, this is probably simpler. This just is less transparent and less spectacular difference. The difference in short noise is very spectacular. From short noise, you can extract some effective charge, which was interpreted as a charge of a quasi-particle in famous experiments in 1997. Here, the meaning of this charge is very different. What you see in the abelian case is still smaller than the charge of the electron, but what we see in the abelian, non-abelian case turns out to be considerably higher than the electron charge. Actually, you see three electron charges in non-abelian case, so it's a rather funny story. Well, all these coefficients are of the same order. So here you see just two harmonics. As for the next harmonic, these two are on the order of gamma square. The next harmonic is already on the order of gamma to the fourth power. And here the same story. These two coefficients are the same order. So now the fourth harmonic has the same order of magnitude as the second. So this is the criterion which you may try to use.
Would interactions between the quasi-particles give you higher harmonics in the first one? Basically, you've got to compare.
Yes, certainly. What I assumed here is that quasi-particles keep pretty far from each other in this story. So I essentially assume that tunneling events are really very rare. So that was an important assumption. If I have a huge bunch of quasi-particles inside, everything is going to change. So tunneling amplitudes must be kept small.
So I'm telling you, your real statement is about you many harmonics in the expansion,
is
how they behave
as you switch. If I make gamma smaller and smaller, I discover that these two guys are of the same order of magnitude, everything else is much smaller. Okay. So that's what you would expect for free electrons. And this makes sense, because essentially what this formula tells is that only free electrons matter. According to this Baer-Young theorem, the process with transfer of one quasi-particle cannot matter, it's wrong periodicity. When you transfer a bunch of three quasi-particles, it's okay. And here what it tells, you can also transfer a bunch of four quasi-particles and it seems to be an electron, but it is not necessarily, because it can have different topological charges, and that's why I have many harmonics.
Okay, maybe we should stop the discussion here and continue over lunch or this afternoon to go to our next talk. I think